Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah, they have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. That was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
The news we revealed on Friday's podcast that Ken Early is away on holidays this week appears to have finally lit a fire under the FAI, who have reportedly begun calling unsuccessful candidates for the Republic of Ireland manager's job. Presumably they wouldn't be making those calls unless they already have their man. But the way this managerial search has been going, who knows? Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hey, Murph.
Hey, Owen. How's it going?
Hey, Brano.
Hey, Owen.
Gavin Cooney and Dion Fanning will be with us as well. Play the music, Simon. This whole show is basically one of these.
Excuse me for interrupting you, John. I hate to do this. He didn't turn up for the first match.
Hang on a minute. Did he get to the Euros? Did he get to the Euros, Ken?
Because he was doing a gig for the BBC's holiday programme.
It's the best thing in the world for you because it's full of protein.
I looks around.
Why are we giving him the job then?
Hang on, sorry, John.
If he got to the Euros,
do you think you're going to get to the Euros?
Stephen Kenny, Ken.
There was an update of sorts on Saturday when I tried to reassert my kingmaker status, which I felt was slipping away from me, so I tried to reassert it on.
Well, we all thought on it was a last grasp for power, and I appreciated it.
We'll talk about the title race right after my latest attempt to drag some information out of Neil Lennon on the Republic of Ireland manager's job. Here we go again, Neil. 3 weeks ago, you told us the process was ongoing. So any updates for us today?
Yeah, I'm aware that there's going to be a decision imminent, whether that be today, tomorrow, or in the next couple of days. What that decision is on, I don't know myself, but I'm pretty sure that there'll be a result pretty soon.
So you... Do you not know the decision, or you're just not telling us the decision?
No, I don't know the decision as yet.
I presume for whoever gets the job that the next game is 5 weeks away. So the sooner the better for whoever the manager is to get their feet under the table, pick squads, all that stuff.
Yeah, I think so. And to get out and watch players live and, you know, just...
Yeah, so a lot of people saw that clip and assumed by Lennon's jovial demeanor that he knew he had the gig.
He had a bit of a smile on his face. Mm.
That's just the people were hoodwinked by
almost
our on-air...
Mm. I would say.
It's just our on-air rapport.
Okay. Yeah.
That's what people are being hoodwinked by there. No, I think he genuinely didn't know at that point.
It must be a bit hard to come on TV every weekend or every second weekend and be like, oh yeah, I don't know if I've got that job that I keep being touted about.
Well, that's, to be honest, I was, yeah, exactly. It's also getting, 3 weeks ago, as I mentioned there, I was asking the same questions. Like, it's madness that 3 weeks later he still didn't know, and well, possibly doesn't know, but by yesterday afternoon it was reported that Lennon had got the call, not the news he was hoping for. Mark McCadden in the Mirror writing, FAI Director of Football Mark Canham on Sunday began the process of contacting candidates who had not been successful. Neil Lennon, long considered second choice to Lee Carsley, is now out of contention, according to that report. Within hours, a new name was emerging as a strong front runner. Mm-hmm. Multiple journalists reporting that Chris Coleman, the man who led Wales to the semi-finals of Euro 2016 and whose late father was from Eastwall in Dublin, is now the favourite for the job. By the way, Ken is away. That might be a bombshell for our Monday, our Monday only listeners. I did mention it on Friday's podcast.
We had no option. We had to send him away.
Yeah,
we can't keep looking for a new manager for the Ireland football team. We had to get him out of the country.
Chris Coleman was also on TV at the weekend. Yeah. In Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, yeah.
He was with Gary Stevens and former Dublin City midfielder Carlton Palmer. I don't know if they asked him, was he taking the Ireland job?
Ken's thoughts on Coleman for the Ireland job. I'm going to say no. I'm actually going to go as far as to say a strong no.
Yeah, he's not excited about
it. If he has the job by this time next week, then Ken will be back on air to give you his thoughts. But I think Ken's reaction is the same as a lot of people online, prompting Coleman's son to come out swinging. Bruno?
Yeah, no, this is quite good. Like, a couple of weeks ago, like, we've been talking about this for, what, 3 months? But a couple of weeks ago, Ken basically outlined, you know, all of this, the Ireland job, the Ireland team qualification, it all is just, like, meant to be just a bit of fun at the end of the day. And, you know, and, you know, so you're kind of like, oh, Roy Keane, that would be a lot of fun, press conference, etc. But I think Coleman and the Coleman family made a really good push for last night that if a Coleman reign is to happen, that could also be a lot of fun.
They'd be the fun faction that Irish football so desperately needs. Yeah.
So his son, Sonny.
Okay, yeah.
Aptly named as a son. Sonny Coleman is on Twitter. He works for he's a football consultant at the UK's largest independent multi-sport agency, World in Motion. So basically, he's a football agent. So Stephen Doyle put out a screen grab last night with a tweet. Chris Coleman's last three managerial jobs and points per game stats, both Hybe down in China and Atromitos in Greece, were in relegation trouble when he left. Sonny replies, Atromitos, I don't know if he talks like this, he took over a team 8 points adrift, kept them up that season, sold all assets, spent zero money, came eight, then after that, full stop, resigned when they cut the budget. Hybe, have them best finish in history, sixth. Season after budget, chopped in half. Stephen Doyle replies, I do my homework. Sonny replies, do it better. Then there's a bit of other kind of random Welsh football fans getting involved. And then Sonny, who seems actually like a nice guy, he comes back and he goes, apologies for knee jerk. I sometimes feel I have to jump in because context is often overlooked. Stephen, who is, I know from personal experience, a nice guy, replies with, no problem at all. So
this is, these two guys are single-handedly saving X from the morass it's falling into. This is just good, honest, good-natured debate.
They
about
chatted
one
out,
lad's dad.
And it ends with both of them going, yeah, okay,
I respect
cool
your opinion. I disagree, but I respect your opinion on Chris Coleman's status.
Yeah. Can I just read a little bit from an Athletic article from 2019? Just because Stephen brought up Coleman's time in China, I think it's good to just to read out a bit of Coleman's perspective, or his, because, you know, Sonny wants context and everything. So this is the context from the mouth of Chris Coleman. So he's talking to Laurie Whitwell in The Athletic back in 2019. Laurie says it's a rare Coleman interview. He says, I led Hybe out of relegation zone to a sixth place finish. When the window opened, he lined up a couple of transfers worth 50 million combined. Quote, we had big players coming to us, he says. I'd met them with their agents and officials from our club. There, done. Then, right at the last minute, the club said, sorry, we can't pay the money, we're scaling back. They'd spent a quarter of a billion in 8 years' existence. Just concentrate on the young ones and the identity of the club, they said. We don't care if you're relegated. I remember pulling Kit, Tony and Adam, there's backroom team, and I said, we're in trouble. This is going to go arse up quickly. Coleman lost six players. Five were sold and our goalkeeper did his cruciate. He was out for a year. Coleman was dismissed from Hybe, winning only one of their first nine games this season. He says, I remember in one press conference they said, it's the worst start in the club's history. I went, club's history? I've got socks older than this club. I was trying to have a laugh with them, but it didn't go down well at all. So, you know, that's the context Sonny's looking for. So that's Coleman's time in China.
I do look forward to Coleman's interaction with Irish supporters if things go south. Expect many more clips from Sunderland Till I Die season one. My memory of it is, I haven't had a chance to go back and watch it since, a lot of sunny side up Chris Coleman positivity being brought to the table, and that quickly being chewed up and spat out by the
relentless
machine that is Sunderland.
Meeting the backroom team, the tea lady, etc.
Yes.
Everyone that I've mentioned, or that Chris Coleman has been mentioned in dispatches around me with, have said, have you watched Sunderland Till I Die? We can't get Chris Coleman. Those two things have gone hand in hand. I have not watched Sunderland Till I Die.
No, I have, yeah. The other one I remembered was Aidan McGeady not really having him, and we've dug up one of the clips from McGeady.
I've had managers before, they come in and go crazy. He just kind of like comes in and it's, oh, that's that, you know, we could have done this better, and it's just then, right, sound, move on. Just kind of an acceptance of, that's an acceptance of that, that's okay. Coming to training a couple of days later, everyone's laughing and joking. It's like, we just could be 3-0 at home, you know?
To be fair to Coleman and the prick bit, they had just been relegated. He, like, if you watch it in the clip, like, he's signing an autograph for a kid.
And yeah, then, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some man, you know, in his, like, 40s or whatever, comes and starts, like, having a pop at him.
And he's having a pop back. Ah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you know, that, I don't want to rule him out as Irish manager because of that.
I wouldn't rule him out of being the Ireland manager based on his appearance in the Sunderland documentary. Every character, and I'm going to call them characters, comes across as ridiculous. There's something about that club. I don't know. There's a new series out at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah.
Must get across that one. But listen, it's more about his record, which as Wales manager was unbelievable, even allowing for the fact he had a particularly good footballer in his squad at the time.
Gareth Bale, was it?
Yeah, Gareth Bale was the man. Yeah, I still think it's an achievement to get a team of Wales' size to a European semi-final. It's been a bit patchier club-wise. Certainly since then, you listed some of the clubs that he's been with. And
yeah, 8 managerial jobs, lasted 2 years or less.
Overall.
Yeah. You know, his time at Real Sociedad, I think that came after Fulham. His entrance actually into managerial world is quite interesting. He's he was a centre half with Swansea and Crystal Palace. He's in the Crystal Palace team of the century. He's in the Crystal Palace game when Cantona Kung Fu kicks your man in the head.
Oh yeah,
he's playing in that game.
Well, in the chest to be accurate,
in the
and
chest.
Then he punches him in the head.
Okay,
thank you, <old.
laughs> thank you, man. So on the would I like to have a pint with Chris Coleman? I think that would be good to have a point with him around, but he's at Fulham, but he's involved in an awful car crash. He's driving his Jag and basically crashes into a load of trees and fence or whatever. The fire brigade takes like an hour to pull him out of the car, but then literally 2 years, just over 2 years later, he's standing on the sideline as the then youngest Premier League manager in history, 32. He's taken over from John Tigna at Fulham, and he's there for like 4 seasons. And I think he does a quite like Laurie Sanchez comes in and takes over, but he does quite a respectable job.
Lower mid table.
Yeah, ninth is the highest finished.
Sort of 13th, that kind of
keeps
thing.
Keeps them up to begin with 5 games to go and stuff like that. So you know that's a good foundation for a managerial career, you think. After that, it's like, it's not great until the Wales job hits. Like, it's Coventry where he's dismissed. It's down in Greece at AEL where, and again, and Sonny wants context, they go into like total financial, you know, so he resigns from there like a week before taking the Wales job. Wales is obviously the high point. Gareth Bale is playing for Wales. James McLean kind of loses him his job with his goal. I suppose people also remember the Ireland-Wales kind of built up a bit of tension around that time. Remember the other Coleman leg break?
When Seamus Coleman's leg was broken.
Yeah,
by
I remember that was
foul, yeah.
That was a rough game, and obviously, you know, Chris Coleman didn't condone it or anything like that in post match, but he did say, you know, all the Irish players weren't wearing halos today either. You know, so it is odd that Coleman, Seamus, is still around the camp, and you know, that's kind of an odd scenario to walk into.
Seamus Coleman strikes me as the kind of person who would get over that. If he felt Chris Coleman was the right manager for the job, I think he'd suck it up, to be honest.
I think so too. I don't think that would be an issue necessarily. You know, he was defending his team. I'm not.
It was a British derby.
Yeah. That's fine.
Whatever.
That's basically fine.
Yeah.
Again, we're not angry about Chris Coleman perhaps getting this job because he called us a British team.
Yeah.
Well, not entirely.
Busy week ahead for Irish football. Manchester City and Liverpool are both playing Premier League during the week as well. So to hear all our football coverage, make sure you're signed up to the World Service and secondcaptains.com for just a fiver a month plus VAT.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
McLean is there. Williams is going to get there first.
Oh. See what I mean about him, Rob. See what I mean about that lad. He is so, so indisciplined.
But he's going to be the hero for Ireland.
That is the guy we should have got at this game. Little niggles at him.
If I was in that Wales dressing room, whoever was closest to McLean, you say, absolutely get inside this fella's head. Poke away at him. See where the weak spots are.
McLean's our man. It's all duck or no dinner now. We got to just go and win the game now.
All duck or no dinner.
Oh, Williams was slow then, and he's lost.
It's not about being slow, Rob. Why can't we kick one or two?
It's great play. Jeff Hendrick, determined.
Hendrick now for Republic of Ireland.
And he's kept it in play. And a chance here, McLean!
Martin leads it, McLean! He's done it again! James McLean!
James McLean
has been the star of this campaign for the Republic of Ireland.
That's Ireland in front.
And he might just have hit the most crucial blow of the whole journey.
And the hero of Vienna thrusts his sword at the dragon's heart in Cardiff.
And it goes down the right hand side, crosses into the box, Carter leaves it!
You often have duck for dinner, grown up.
Rarely had duck. Nearly 3 months on from the announcement that Stephen Kenny's contract would not be renewed, we are still dragging Dion Fanning and Gavin Cooney in to talk about who his successor might be. Hey, fellas.
How's it going?
Chris Coleman, anyone?
Yeah, okay.
That sounds positive.
Mass welcome and encouragement for Chris Coleman across the country. Look, I don't know if Coleman's going to get the job, but they have definitely spoken with him. I think Coleman was pretty optimistic that he would get it a couple of weeks ago. It seemed to fade in the last couple of weeks, but perhaps it's back on the table given Lee Carsey is clearly the first choice, but they seemingly can't get that over the line. So if not, it seems Coleman is definitely a contender.
Chris Coleman is a man who brought a, shall we say, a similarly sized football nation to the semi-finals of a major tournament not too long ago, Dion. So why do I sense silence from you and mostly negativity from people online?
Yeah, it's a good point in that, like, the response to that is that Gareth Bale probably got them to the semi-final. But again, you know, maybe Ireland are reaching up, you know, like Evan Ferguson's recent, you know, how things have gone recently with Brighton doesn't suggest that he is immediately going to take the Gareth Bale kind of role. But, you know, we're always believing that if we've got one great player, we can actually do something. So maybe that's, you know, that's where Chris Coleman comes in. But I don't think his record in general as a manager is something that would excite people. And I think when you look at what the FAI said they wanted their head coach to be, and this idea of what the head coach was going to be, and, you know, specifically referring to head coach rather than manager, it's hard to see how you end up with, from that description, with Chris Coleman. And you talk about, you wonder when they decided not to renew Stephen Kenny's contract. Now everyone knows that most people feel that it had reached the end of the line, but when they decided to do that, what were they thinking was going to happen next? Like, what were they planning? Everybody knows in football that most of the time, whenever you make a move, you have somebody lined up, you have some sort of strategy lined up for what you're going to do. Now, did they think that Lee Carsley was going to take? They knew what salary they were going to offer Lee Carsley or what money they had. Did they think he would take it for that? But it doesn't seem like a well thought out plan, and I still don't believe it will be Chris Coleman, because I think they are also conscious of how it's going to play, and I feel that maybe we're being led down a Chris Coleman shaped path. I don't know what the surprise is at the end of that sentence.
Well, that's the point, yeah. You know, because at this stage, I don't see of any of the contenders that are being
Stephen
mentioned.
Stephen Kenny,
anyone really jumping out as that? Ah, you thought it's actually going to be. Well, Roy Keane actually would be the one out of all those, but it doesn't sound like that has gone anywhere at all. So they might be worried about the people. At this stage, it sounds like whoever is appointed, it's going to be an underwhelming appointment.
Yeah, it probably will, especially if they can't get Carsley done. I think Dion's right. There are actually a few things, in my opinion, that are kind of to Chris Coleman's credit. Okay, his run with Wales. As his son on Twitter was saying last night, you can split hairs about his record at club level, but you can't argue with his record at international level. And he did obviously do a really good job there. He's done things at Wales, like cap teenagers just so they don't defect to countries like Ireland with Ethan Ampadu. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that should be in the job description for the Irish manager. But his appointment would make absolutely no sense if you judge the FAI by what they want for the role, because he's not a head coach. You know, he's seen as more of a traditional manager. And that's before you get into the whole other realm of the, you know, Venables doing a job in the BBC holiday programme style issues, like him being late for a press conference at Real Sociedad because he'd been out to 5 a.m. the night before. But he doesn't make any sense.
Faulty washing machine had been the initial excuse for that.
Yeah, that ironically didn't wash, that excuse. but it makes no sense that for the FAI to appoint a guy who's primarily a manager when they're looking for a head coach. So that would then bring more, exactly like Dion says, when they're worried about PR and impression, that actually asks questions not of the guy who's been appointed, but of the people who are appointing them.
Yeah, is this just like a bargaining tool with Lee Carsley, just to say, right, okay, we actually do have people who are interested in this?
It's not a very good one.
No.
Like, if you're Lee Carsley, you're saying, well, actually, my price has just gone up.
Yeah.
If Chris Coleman is your alternative.
Don't give
it to Chris Coleman.
Well, the idea here, I suppose, would be that at the moment, Lee Carsley is the only name that anyone has any interest in. And, like, it's not going to go away until someone else is hired, you know, because at the moment we're hearing Carsley's definitely out. Carsley maybe isn't out. Carsley has salary concerns. Like, until we actually give this to someone, it's Lee Carsley's to turn down. So, like, if I was the FAI, I would be at least trying to say, well, we do have other options. We are investigating other options. And Chris Coleman is literally the best name they can come up with to say that, you know, we're not completely devoid of ideas here. I'm Mark Bloody Canham, you know, and I get paid a lot of money to come up with insightful, you know, left field suggestions like Chris Coleman for this job, Lee. So, you know, we're going to be just fine without you.
Yeah, you've done well there, Murph. Constructed argument.
I don't know, like, it's something, isn't it? We are talking about Chris Coleman here. Like, you know, I think we do have to show a little bit of left field thinking here.
But the only thing is Chris Coleman, like, he is left field in the sense that, you know, everyone is going, "Geez, I didn't see that coming."
Yeah. The left field thinking is for me. I mean, Chris Coleman has been in the betting for the last, like, probably two or three Irish manager hires.
Including this one, to be honest. Yeah. Isn't this one throughout, but it's been mentioned a few times, but never to the point that we really bother bringing up his name, I don't think. And just on Coleman, because there are those bigger questions about the process, and I want to ask about Lee Carsley and where that's at the moment. But he had Gareth Bale, fine. People always say he had Bale and Ramsey. Like, Aaron Ramsey was a good footballer, no better than lots of footballers and lots of other teams. Gareth Bale was a once-in-a-generation footballer. He was incredible. But, I mean, Norway have Erling Haaland at the moment and can't get into a major tournament, let alone get to the semi-finals. So in the one comparable job, he did brilliantly. So is that not enough to suggest he could do brilliantly in this job?
Nobody knows. Like, this is the thing. Like, you could... And again, when you say we're being dragged in again to talk about this, like, this is the point we keep making is, you know, do you want a manager who you get excited about? And I think the last time I was in talking about this, we made the point about getting excited about Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, and then realising, I think, for the first friendly against Latvia or whoever it was, that actually they're just going to be standing on the sideline and the football is going to be played by other people. And so maybe we don't need to get excited by a manager until, you know, at the point of his of their appointment, it comes later. But at the same time, there are an awful lot of things just kind of think, well, what does Chris Coleman really bring to it? And I take your point. I think that is, maybe that's the thing. Maybe we just want somebody who's going to come and organise a team. They'll have a little bit of kind of old school dressing room respect, good banter, good stories, and maybe that was traditionally what sort of the Irish team kind of, you know, used to always hear these stories about, you know, like Irish managers losing, taking the Irish squad away from that kind of, that sort of, you know, we come into the Ireland camp to have it, you know, to have a good time and to get away from our stresses and our, you know, the pressures of club life.
One of the issues with Coleman is people will listen to the very coherent argument that Dion just said, and all they'll hear is just the death of hope. I mean, we're back to like exactly what Stephen Kenny was meant to break. You know, I mean, that you're like the job description that you just discussed there, the kind of managers we used to have and we wanted to move on from. And I'm not necessarily saying you're wrong to say that, but I'm just saying that this is, I think, why people aren't into the Coleman idea is partly because it represents that.
Well, you see, the interesting thing is when some of us would make a case for Stephen Kenny and maybe beyond the point that lots of people have given up on Stephen Kenny, one of the answers was he's not the only person who can play this style of football or who can pursue these grander ideas and have this extravagant ambition for the Ireland team. He's not the only one out there, because you would say, well, who's next? Sam Allardyce, whatever, you know, people, well, that's not going to happen. You know, that was the automatic assumption. Well, that's not going to happen, you idiot. You know, get rid of Stephen Kenny and we will get the next progressive manager in. You fool, you know, you blind fool. I'm just repeating the abuse I got.
I feel like I'm being targeted here.
But, you know, and now we're left with Chris Coleman, who nobody can claim, whatever. And your point is, you know, it is a good point. He took a team to, you know, a semi-final, and he does have that on his CV. But nobody can make the claim that this is anything in you know, this is somebody to succeed and take over from what Stephen Kenny was doing.
Is this the market that we're shopping in now, though? We can't even afford Lee Carsley. Lee Carsley doesn't have vast experience managing senior club teams. He's done brilliantly with the England under-21s. But anyway, we don't have the money to push the boat out for him. So whoever we're going to end up with is going to be, if it's not Chris Coleman, it sounds like it's going to be somebody we're disappointed with.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, I mean, when we've talked about a lot of the candidates, we say, oh, would it be a gamble? But, like, the gamble is us, you know, because, I mean, not many people have managed the Ireland team and gone on, enhanced their reputations with it, and gone on to do great things in management. Okay, that's partly down to the age of some of the people we appointed and the fact that they were at the end of their careers. So I think so, yeah. I mean, and Coleman is free and freely available means that the FAI wouldn't have to pay any compensation, which they can't afford. And if they can't find, whatever, 200 grand or whatever is the difference in negotiation between themselves and Carsley, then clearly, yeah, I mean, this is the market.
Should they just find that money, by the way? Should they just find a way to pay Lee Carsley what he's worth? Because when you're headhunting somebody, as they will be doing with Carsley, generally you're going to have to give them better conditions than what they're currently on.
At this point, I might be accused of hypocrisy, and maybe it is. At this point, I think probably yes, just because he's clearly been the first choice all along. It will look quite bad on those involved if they can't get it over the line, having courted him for months. I know that, you know, for too long we've paid the senior manager too much at the expense of investment in other parts of the game, but for that amount of money, I think, yeah, if that's the only difference. You see, the frustrating thing with Carsley is no one really knows where he's at. You know, like, he hasn't really said anything. Okay, he seems to have told Shea Given that he was out of the running. Brian Kerr is of a similar opinion. Then you read stories like those last week that say there's a difference in valuation, and you think, oh, well, that's a negotiation tactic by someone, which means perhaps it's still alive. But no one's been able to get a read on whether he wants the damn thing.
Yeah, and we have saved a lot of money by dragging this out so interminably. I mean, if we hire him in August, we're, you know, like, that's all the savings we need.
It should be mentioned, the FAI are literally being brought in front of the Oireachtas this week, the Public Accounts Committee, so maybe they would feel it's not a great look at the moment to be paying a manager above what supposedly they intended to pay him in the first place.
Yeah, and I would, in general, I would say pay. I agree with Gavin. I think we've gone too far, that we went too far down the road of overpaying managers for a number of years when that money could have gone somewhere else. And the idea that there was, you know, if you could pay a manager 4 million a year or something, or 2 million a year, it would solve our problems, isn't right. Because again, the players are the ultimate, like it is about producing players. So that money should go somewhere else. But I would say that rather than Chris Coleman, if the FAI are really sincere about what they wanted to do, they either do two things. For that salary, they say, right, who are our coaches? Who are the people that actually we would say, if we had some coaching structure in Ireland, that this is the next person to take over from Stephen Kenny? Like, do we gamble on somebody like that within the coaching structure that we are actually promoting? Or do we pay a bit more for Lee Carsey, who's got his record with England under 21s, but he's also the one candidate at the moment who you could say actually fulfills the criteria that the FAI want.
Well, you know, Anthony Barry, does he fulfill? Well, Anthony Barry, well, he could be free from one of his many jobs if Thomas Tuchel gets sacked after they lost yesterday.
Yeah, well, he does. He would, and he also. And again, this comes back to, when do we want to be excited? Like, when do we? Because, you know, he does have that slight sort of air of mystery. Like, nobody knows what's going to happen with Anthony Barry. You know, we don't know how good or bad he's going to be, and we'll take that.
Or how long he'll stick around.
Yeah, yeah, we'll take all that. That's in. You're in. You know. There will be more or less universal acclaim to the appointment of Anthony Barry. Rather than the appointment of Chris Coleman, which is probably unfair on Chris Coleman.
Yeah, that's the key point. I mean, how to drum up excitement for an Irish managerial candidate is to put someone forward who we have absolutely no idea how they'll do. I mean, the real reason people are kind of holding their nose at the idea of Lennon and Coleman, we just know too much about them. There's a sense that, oh, here we are. It is like your earlier question. It is a kind of reminder of our status in the game, you know, which is maybe no bad thing to get a bracing reality into the wilderness in which we walk. Is that Coleman is probably, I mean, looking from outside, even, you know, I refer once again to the ingeniously named Sonny Coleman, who is obviously the son of Coleman. And he was messaging back Ireland fans saying, well, what do you want? Yeah. we don't want your dad.
I just hope Sonny is involved in the press conferences if Chris Coleman ends up being the manager.
There has been, like, I don't think Coleman would be terrible, in fairness, but I think it would reflect badly in the FAI to say one thing and do another, to want to appoint a head coach. Like,
Does this process reflect badly on the FAI so far? Because you're hearing stuff come out, Dan McDonnell reporting that a chat with Stephen Bradley was scheduled but never went ahead. It's not just the length of time this has taken. It's just various little stories like that are coming out. You end up getting Damien Duff talking about it being embarrassing now. Now, whether it's embarrassing or not, just the fact that someone of Damien Duff's stature is saying that about it doesn't reflect well. Dion was talking about the whole PR of it. I mean, it's been a bit of a disaster, really, up until now.
Yeah, I mean, the end will justify the means, but that's to bring it back to Carsey. If they don't deliver to Carsey, and Dan was writing about this in the Indo today, it shines a light on those making the decision process. It's gone on for so long. I mean, I can't believe it's gone on for this long. I think it's 13 weeks. We've basically known that Stephen Kenny was out the door from last June. You know, I mean, there's one thing to, you know, let's not be ringing around and disrespect the man on the job, but you need a contingency plan. And as far as I know, there have been some kind of informal sounding out of Carsley from as far back as last June, just to get the, because when I was looking into whether Stephen Kenny was in danger in his job after losing in Athens, I was told that no, because there's no candidate waiting in the wings, say Ali Carsley. So obviously there was an awareness then of his situation. And yeah, we've heard anecdotal stories of, you know, being late for meetings and stuff being rescheduled at relatively short notice. That doesn't look well. Now, they have cast the net wide. I heard today that they talked to a guy called Anthony Hudson, who was the assistant manager to the US at the last World Cup and has managed New Zealand and Bahrain.
Sounds like, good.
Go on.
Bring him in.
Go on.
I'm pretty sure he was told last night that he's out of the running.
Easy come, easy go there.
Like a comet across the sky.
Unbelievable.
In 4 years' time, we'll be like, if only we'd gotten Hudson. Well, Hudson would have solved this.
Gavin, so you said he's been told, Neil Lennon reportedly has been told that he's not. If they're ringing around people telling them they're not getting the job, surely we're making all these who should get it. They've made their decision. They've got their man now, surely.
Potentially. I can't get a read on whether they're merely shortening a shortlist or they've got the top one. And I don't know whether, like, they have to, it has to, be subject to board approval. As of last night, the board hadn't been summoned. Now that can change quickly because they can just meet online now. So, I mean, there is a sense. Obviously, Ken is on holidays. I mean, Ken is basically, you know,
no, it's going to happen this week.
The FAI is the child of Prague. Just send him out there, and the weather will turn. But look, we could get it this week. In fairness,
the only thing is, like, that stuff. How long it takes? It matters during the process, you know. It matters, like, to journalists covering it. But ultimately, as Gavin says,
an important constituency.
Huge constituency. But, like, I think the longest, I think the gap between before Trapattoni was appointed was longer than this one.
I do feel, though, that if for an ordinary FA, for an ordinary club, it doesn't matter at all how long you have to wait. But it's just, you know, it's the FAI again, you know.
There is that. There is no doubt that it creates, and again, because you're going from one idea to another, and there doesn't seem to be any clear thinking about what you're pursuing.
Yeah,
it doesn't look good, but. You know, what the point I was going to make was when Trapattoni came on board, because suddenly there was this, like, up until the week before Trapattoni was appointed, it was between Gerard Houllier and Terry Venables. And then suddenly the magic money tree.
Money arrived.
And Giovanni Trapattoni got the job, and everyone was like, this is worth waiting for. And, you know, Trapattoni was essentially like, okay, he had his track record. But if you remember the context of the time, and it is, was that these Irish players needed somebody to get tough with them, you know? And it was like the Bayern press conference. Everyone was excited about. Yeah, we're going to get some guy who's going to get tough.
He's real proper drill sergeant.
Yeah, yeah. He's not going to take any messing from these players. And and Trapattoni, you know, was fine. But would everyone say that was money well spent? You know, as a journalist, he was great to be around, but it wasn't. You know, you couldn't say that Irish football moved forward under the years of Giovanni Trapattoni. But the point is there doesn't seem to be that magic wand at the end of this that we're going to produce somebody that everyone gets excited. Now, I think the Roy Keane thing is still interesting. Mm. Maybe he's, I don't know.
Not on Sky yesterday.
But it wasn't on Sky. And the one thing I did note on the Stick to Football podcast last week, he talked about how he was kind of done with management.
Yeah, and he'd been disrespected.
Yeah. And, you know, no, maybe totally coincidentally, I did think of the, you know, financial packages being talked about in terms of Lee Carsley and stuff. And so would that be an act of disrespect to Roy if that kind of, because, you know, it would probably be less than he was getting. It would be less than he was getting as Martin O'Neill's assistant.
Yeah. I think he would have been the sixth highest paid manager in Europe based on what he was getting as Martin O'Neill's assistant.
Right, well, there you go. That, you know, so
international.
Yeah, obviously.
But again, maybe he is somebody that you could, if it isn't Lee Carsley, if it isn't Anthony Barry, the kind of mystery candidate, he's keen to somebody who you would definitely, if you were lining up Chris Coleman, as a kind of flyer, you know, you say, hold on a second, no, it's Roy Keane.
Yeah.
Everyone would be pretty happy about that.
But if you're going to break your job spec for Chris Coleman, then just do it for Roy Keane. You'll get national goodwill in a way that seemingly you won't with Chris Coleman.
But equally, if you're going to break what you're going to, you know, if you're going to break what you should be paying, what you want to pay for a manager for Roy Keane, you probably would do it for Lee Carsley.
Okay, well, whoever the next manager is will have a decision to make about his first choice goalkeeper. Gavin, you were writing about Jurgen Klopp's praise of Caoimhín Kelleher. I don't know exactly who is the number one in Ireland, but if they have a better goalie than Caoimhín, I have to say, respect.
Yeah. I mean, we are probably the envy of Europe in terms of our production of goalkeepers and swimmers, obviously, lately. But Kelleher has stepped in for Alisson. He's played 14 games this season now across all competitions, which is more than the last two seasons combined, and he's been really good, I have to say. You know, he's been really solid and reliable for Liverpool. I don't think Liverpool supporters get that kind of sense of unease when he plays and Alisson is absent that maybe they had in the past. And, you know, he's been really important in the last couple of weeks, not that important against Brentford because they won that pretty easily, but two vital saves one-on-one against Burnley the week before. His distribution is really good. He's kind of naturally two-footed. His distribution might be better than Alisson's, I think. He doesn't have to kind of do that awkward kind of outside of the right foot pass to compensate for a lack of a left foot. But Bazunu has been playing every week. So, I mean, in the Irish context, I don't think you can really argue with the selection of Bazunu as number one. And Bazunu's is back in form now for Southampton.
It was an amazing save. Yeah, popped up like some people's feeds, I would say, over the weekend.
Arguably more impressive than the Kelleher save from Ivan Toney at point blank range at the weekend. So, but I think it's exciting to see how well he's done this season at Liverpool, Kelleher, just because it's an insight into if this guy plays every week. Like, look just how more physically commanding and how more confident he looks. Just how good he can be.
Well, let's just hope that Alisson stays injured for as long as possible. Carl, well, a couple of people have emailed in about the same Irish player. We need to talk about Nathan, they're saying. Dion, Carl Walsh. Nathan Collins' stock was soaring after his goal against Ukraine. He soon became the most expensive Irish player ever with a move to Wolves. Blah, blah, blah. After patchy debut season, Wolves saw Collins as disposable, even if it could be argued that FFP forced their hand. Brentford sanctioned a club record fee with the assumption that Collins would bank last season's experience and emerge a better player. Any early optimism has since dissipated. He's had the most errors leading to goals of any outfield player in the Premier League this season, and Thomas Frank continues to field awkward questions regarding his performances. It's also notable that Stephen Kenny ran out of patience with the player at the end of his Irish tenure. We remember he subbed him against Greece at halftime. Where does Nathan Collins go from here? Are we fans guilty of overhyping a player who had, in hindsight, played very few minutes at the top level? Can Collins emulate another Irishman, Richard Dunn, and forge a distinguished Premier League career after a difficult start? So that one is a long, cogent, well-thought-out email from Carl Walsh. Michael Muldoon is snappier. Is Nathan Collins good or absolutely terrible? Kind regards, a concerned citizen watching Match of the Day after a few pints.
Chris Coleman doing a bit of research.
Yeah, on Saturday he was pretty terrible. He wasn't alone in being terrible for Brentford at the back. Like, it wasn't. It was chaotic, and I think one of the things people would have hoped for was that under Frank he would actually improve, and the kind of whatever the style Brentford were going to play would suit him and would see him come on. But it's just gone. Liverpool are in such good form attacking wise that it's not even just like you're talking about a player playing at the Premier League. You're talking about playing at the highest the league within the Premier League when you're playing a team like Liverpool. But again, it's not a one-off.
No, against Wolves. Do you remember that match a few weeks ago? He was that around Christmas? The one against Wolves when he just gifted them. Again, when you're playing your former team, it's never good. Just literally gave two goals to them. So it's happened a few times recently. But physically, he's impressive. He's big. He's got that. He went straight into Wolves, like our emailer saying, as part of the leadership group and all this. I always thought that was a bit odd, a player so young, but obviously a great sign. And yet, just stop giving goals away.
Yeah, no, he does. And he does, like, and it's one of those things, he does look the part. He's kind of one of those players you think, like, how much, even, now Brentford aren't going to sign players because, they're renowned for their
they're
data.
Not just going to sign a player based on posture.
He's got a great head of hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's a fine strapping lad. We'll sign him.
Yeah. But he does, like, I think maybe Ireland fans were guilty of that. But in terms of, like, if this guy looks the part. Yeah. But it's just not.
So is he good or bad? Good or terrible?
I still do think there's a player there. And
I think so. Yeah.
But I'm going to stick with good.
Good or terrible, Kevin?
More good than terrible.
Good.
It's on a scale. I think it's obviously leaning closer to good than terrible. It's a rough enough season for him. I think part of it is exacerbated by Brentford. Really do leave him exposed at times, especially, when they start, when they go 1-0 down, they do chase games sometimes. And as a result, Collins is sucked out into huge amounts of space playing at the right of a back three. And isn't always convincing one-on-one, I find, or anyway, people whose opinions I respect and steal would say that. So it is exacerbated, though, in the team that he's in. To have played the amount of Premier League football he has played at his age is a huge achievement, and he will be the better for it. But if Chris Coleman is picking a back three for the Irish team at the end of March, I don't know if Collins is actually in it on form.
We seem to have a lot of players like that at the moment. It's like Nathan Collins, Dar O'Shea at Burnley. It's great that he's getting Premier League experience, even if he gets beaten every week. Gavin Bazunu who last year, brilliant that he's getting Premier League experience. Everyone keeps scoring past him.
We're bigger on minutes than morale, I feel. if you're picking a back three, I think Scales, Amabamadele and O'Shea are probably on form, are probably in there ahead of Collins.
Should we be worried about Evan Ferguson, by the way? Dion, you said he's not quite turning into our Gareth Bale at the moment. 14 games, I think it is now, without a goal. A lot of them, in fairness, off the bench.
No, I wouldn't be worried about him. I think he's too good and he's got too much potential to be worried. Like, it's not, he's very young, and you know, these little dips are going to happen. And you know, it's probably it may, which would probably be better from the long term, make clubs think, you know, well, we won't pay 100 million for him just yet, and that would be no harm if he is, you know, I think the last thing he needs is that at the moment. So I think I wouldn't be worried at all.
Just on the title race, obviously, is a nice moment for everybody who doesn't want to see Manchester City win the league at the weekend with them dropping points. I was just having a little look at the big chances missed table in the Premier League. Join top, Erling Haaland and Darwin Nunez. For all the Nunez bashers out there, of which for some reason people think I'm one. I love watching Darwin Nunez.
That Nunez thing, the finish, is maybe the most surprising thing I've seen in weeks. I cannot believe... I'm not surprised he tried it, but I'm amazed he pulled it off. But in fairness to him, and I think it was pretty much his only BCM of the game. Did Chelsea kind of give us a template as to how to take points off Manchester City? Maybe. Like, I mean, their counter-attacking was very good. Everton showed the week before that there's literally no point in going to Man City just to defend, because you will concede. But also in the Chelsea template is Erling Haaland missing a whole hatful of chances, putting them wide and not even on target, and you're defensive midfielders seemingly have some kind of magic amnesty from red cards, because Caicedo should have gone in that game, if perhaps even in the first half. So I suppose we can cling to hope that Man City are human in the title race. I think that, like, Arsenal look absolutely brilliant at the moment. I mean, you can see how they just kind of anaesthetised Burnley in a way that Liverpool couldn't the week before, and we saw how superior Arsenal were to Liverpool in the league game at the Emirates a couple of weeks ago. So, like, if you're going to rank, you'd imagine, like, on form, Man City probably looked the best, then Arsenal second, and then Liverpool third. But Liverpool's injuries are a problem. But they have two things, I think, in their favour. One is the hope that there can be some mass emotional event at Anfield now that Klopp has announced he's out the door. That can make a difference. And Man City and Arsenal still have to play each other. So maybe some kind of mutually assured destruction. Ideally for Liverpool, they draw them each other in like the quarterfinals or the semifinals, the Champions League. That would be a great draw for Liverpool and not the other two teams. But that's how I'd see the title race.
Yeah, I'm still a Darwin skeptic, I'm afraid. And I did wonder if Diogo Jota, actually, because he was so close, he obviously set it up with the header. I did wonder, did he actually talk him through that finish? Because what I've noticed about Jota, I think Jota is a huge loss for Liverpool. I think he's a massive loss. He's not just because he's such an assured finisher, but he's such an intelligent player. He's so intelligent. Like, you've seen it in there was another game, I can't remember the game, where he was actually running with Nunez and he told Nunez where to put the ball. And I think he actually does Nunez's thinking for him on
like
the
some
pitch.
Sort of neural link type of thing.
Yeah, so I think now
if Jota's the last Liverpool player to touch the ball before Nunez gets a big chance,
some of
Jota's like brain will be,
but he may have just no at the same time, like, it's unlikely that he would have said to Darwin Nunez, why don't you just chip the keeper from here.
Well, in fairness, Michael Owen says that to even consider that finish is madness. It's a 1 in 10, 2 in 10 finish at best,
because you usually think the keeper, if he's gone down early, but he was standing up
at all. Yeah. And you can hear almost impossible goal to score.
You can hear the Brentford fans jeering as they anticipated this going.
Well, Klopp's face was hilarious. So I was like, what the fuck?
So, but I think Jota is a big loss for Liverpool. And I think the Arsenal game showed it, that they're still, like, you know, when Klopp announced his resignation, he gave this line that, you know, the players have progressed so much more quickly than I'd anticipated. So this allows me to walk away with the, you know, 2.0 team in position. But it's actually not the case. They're still really a work in progress. I don't think they're anywhere near as reliable as the Arsenal game showed, as the great team Klopp had. And I feel that will show itself over the next few weeks.
Okay, we're going to leave it there for now, because there's a lot happening with the FAI this week. So this might not be your last visit to the studios.
I rocked this on Thursday. Oh, we haven't rocked this in a while. We have to get our
house in order for Alan Dillon, says the FAI. You got to pay Lee Carsey the going wage and no more.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Thanks, lads.
There's a winning mentality. I see it in their eyes. They've got glazed eyes. what I said to him at the end, and I'm not ashamed to say it. I said, are you ready to win a World Cup? Because we're in it to win it.
They've got to trust me. I'm taking these guys into battle, and I'm doing my own stapling.
Look, we're not getting carried away, but we're now getting to that point now where we are inspiring.
Does a struggling salesman start turning up on a bicycle? He turns up in a newer car, Deception.
So what becomes of you, my love?
Along the way, we're going to have fun.
When they have finally stripped you off.
I try and laugh several times a day.
The handbags and the glad rags. As your granddad has to sweat, so you goodbye.
A sergeant major spends all his time training his men to be killers.
And make sure that they arrive for meetings on time and dressed in the right way.
He doesn't polish his own boots. The bosses panicking, they're going, oh, cut back.
Non-negotiable. The way we play football is non-negotiable.
Anyone for a bit more Sunderland Till I Die season one?
I go on, on.
Charlie Methven, does that name ring a bell? It soon will when I play you the clip. Thanks for listening today. Thanks, Murph. Thanks, Brano.
Thank you, Owen. Thank you, thanks, Brano. Murph.
We'll chat tomorrow. Charlie Methven was the, forget about Chris Coleman, Methven was the star of season one of that series, the executive director. Here he is in a meeting to choose the music at the Stadium of Light.
So this is Dance the Nights, right? Which, for some people, have some associations with glorious times past, etc. For that short period at the Stadium of Light when everything was going really well. My personal instinct is new start, fresh beginnings, new sound. Can someone challenge me on that?
It's been here since the stadium opened, so it was the run-out music when the stadium opened, or the build-up music. So with a certain age group of fans, I think it resonates.
Yeah. Doesn't get you up for it. It's too slow. It's boring. It's like, oh, we're going in the
quite,
stadium.
It's quite dramatic, isn't it?
Slow. This is how I do it. I'm a DJ. Is you got to try and build people up, and you got to try and get the atmosphere building through a track. If you try and think about the atmosphere that Chris and I agree that we're trying to create, we want it to be rocking in there, and a little bit mad, a little bit like people. Some of the fans take pride in the fact this place is going to be a bit noisier. A bit more in your face.
One thing I would say is that it doesn't matter what you play unless you get a new PA system.
Which one is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine, it's not that at all. It's the opposite of that, it's to persuade that there's a world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.